This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hi, thanks for joining us. Hour three rolling along this morning on Sports Map Radio. Sheldon Mass is going to join us this hour. We'll talk college basketball with him. A little bracketology. It is middle of February. So what, a month from Selection Sunday? When is Selection Sunday? I think it's like March 12th or so. About a month away. But we'll get an idea of where some teams are and as they're heading, who's on the bubble, who are out. Is Kentucky struggles? I'm going to put them in an interesting situation come Selection Sunday. A couple of other teams. We'll get Shelby Mass' take on this. There is some breaking news coming down from the NBA. Is Joe Mazzulla is no longer the interim head coach of the Boston Celtics. Did anybody really think he was? Because Ime Udoka is officially out from his suspension. He's done. Now Joe Mazzulla is officially the head coach of the Boston Celtics. If you followed the story last year, Ime Udoka was suspended, had this relationship. Nobody really knows why. That story famously just fell off a cliff, just went from one of the biggest scandals and everybody knew something, but nobody wanted to say anything. And it was this big deal. And you had NBA guys going, people are telling me that he will never be a coach anywhere again. And you're like, wow, what did he do? Yeah, he cheated on Nia Long maybe and sent some email. Well, what did he do? And nobody really knew. Nobody really understood it. But nevertheless, Joe Mazzulla was the interim head coach, right, of a team that went to the NBA Finals, won the Eastern Conference last year. And he was, until Ime Udoka, whatever the Celtics wanted to do with Ime Udoka, which was not bring him back, but they had to work it out so that Ime Udoka and the Celtics were okay with the contract split. Nevertheless, he is now the head coach of the Celtics. The Celtics are on top of the Eastern Conference. They have the best record. I think right now they have the best record in the NBA. It's close with Denver, but I think they still do. So he's done a great job. They're good on both ends of the floor. They've got two good superstars in Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. They play great defense. They're 42-17 entering the All-Star break. And Ime Udoka's time of 1 year and the great things that he did is over. But nevertheless, people knew it was over. I never thought he was an interim head coach anyway. It was always, if you wanted to say he was an interim head coach in the way like Steve Wilkes was an interim head coach, meaning you're not guaranteed the job when this thing's over. We're going to be looking for a head coach. It's not that Matt Rhule was suspended and is coming back, but we're not giving you the official job yet. Then that's the way Joe Mazzulla was viewed as, right? We have an emergency here. We've uncovered a scandal. We don't have time to go find a new head coach from outside, so we'll promote from within. You get the job until we find the time during this offseason to get a coach that we want to be the new head coach of the Celtics. Well, it just so happened that it's now Joe Mazzulla and he gets a contract, so good for him. And sometimes you see this play out. Sometimes the interim coach works, and then sometimes it doesn't, right? Sometimes you wonder, like in Steve Wilkes' case, why wasn't he given an opportunity to be the head coach of the Carolina Panthers when he went 6-6 over the final 12 games after the team started 1-4 and everything that happened to the Carolina Panthers this year? Getting rid of Christian McCaffrey, Baker Mayfield not working out, injuries at the quarterback position, just a complete mess. And Wilkes had them, however you want to put it, because of the bad record, nevertheless, but it was still a playoff push in a weak division. But in this case, Mazzulla is only 34 years old, has got the Celtics on top of the Eastern Conference, and they're not missing a beat. They don't look like they miss Ime Udoka at all. And so Brad Stevens, who I thought wasn't going to be a longtime head coach with the Celtics and ended up being a fantastic coach for the Celtics, he's now director of basketball operations, and he said, this has worked. This is the way we want it. So congratulations to Joe Mazzulla. What's going to happen to Ime Udoka? I have no idea. We never really got any sort of closure on that, being the nosy sports fans that we are.
Just floating around out there.
Just whatever. Seriously, it was like, what did he do? I can't tell you. Why can't you tell us? Don't want to get into it. No, it's bad. Don't want to get into it. Meanwhile, the DA in Austin is not pressing charges on Chris Beard. And that altercation he had with his fiance.
Just, look the other way.
Texas didn't want to get into that mess, so they fired him, and now he's been he won't be charged. You listen, it doesn't mean he's innocent. That's the other problem, right? It doesn't mean he's innocent. Just means they're not going to press charges.
Just means they don't want to go through the hassle.
They just don't want to go through the hassle. That's the thing. That happens a lot.
Yeah, the accusing party was like, what?
You know,
my lawyer spelled it out for me. No, thanks.
No, I don't want to do it. Exactly. So Chris Beard, he probably disappears for a little bit and then probably emerges and pops up somewhere.
Yep.
That's how it works.
Unscathed.
Unscathed. Do you see the other news? Ken Whisenhunt is back in football. He's going to be the special assistant, quote unquote, to the Alabama football staff.
Oh, is he getting what's his name? Old job.
Steve Sarkisian. Bill O'Brien.
Yeah.
Yeah. That sort special of offensive assistant. Special assistant. Well, you're not really the coordinator, but you're like on staff.
What's the special assistant to the regional director?
Yeah, right. Exactly. You kind of like hang around and you don't really have a title.
Saban just likes rekindling careers, doesn't he?
He does, man. He does. You can get a real boost if you're on Nick Saban's staff.
Yeah.
You get to be on that staff and you hang out a little bit. And Nick, look, he resurrected two careers, three if you really want to go with Bill O'Brien. Like Lane Kiffin was poison. Right, coming out of USC, right? Who wants Lane Kiffin? Who wants Boy Wonder? Burns himself out of Oakland, 1 year in Tennessee, fired at USC, his dream job. Who wants this kid? Ugh. Nick Saban's like, come on over here, son. I got you. You hang out a little bit, and then pop, you'll find something. He did. Florida Atlantic. Turned the Owls around. Now he's the head coach at Ole Miss. And now he's one of the – he's a beloved – coaching figure again. Steve Sarkisian. I don't care if Steve Sarkisian had a billionaire friend buy him the job. He was never going to get a gig without landing at Nick Saban's feet first. Right?
He was for a while almost untouchable just because drunk on the job never looks good.
Never looks good. And then he went to he was with the Falcons for a brief period. He was with Dan Quinn for a brief period of time. Then he was with Alabama. Then he landed at Texas.
Yeah, head coach.
Texas is one of the major jobs in sports. It's not like Lane Kiffin is like, I parlayed that to Florida Atlantic.
Texas football. Head coach, Texas football might be a top five job in the country.
It might be one of the top coaching jobs in all of sports in the country.
Yeah.
And Steve Sarkisian gets it because he – again, connected and hung out at Alabama for a brief period of time. Bill O'Brien, same thing. Bill O'Brien, offensive coordinator of the Patriots, goes to Penn State, parlays that to an NFL head coaching gig, gets fired from that NFL coaching gig. Where does he go? Nick Saban, come on in, son. Hang out here for a little bit. Boom. Patriots have an opening. They don't hire anybody for that opening. Let's do a committee thing, and then they finally.
You think they waited? Like, you know, it's like, we want to bring Billy O back, but Saban grabbed him, so let's just hold the position. We'll rotate it around with a few guys, see if anything sticks.
Hey, man, that's how I would spin it.
But O'Brien, you know, let him get his head straight with the college game again.
Right. That's how I would spin it. That's how I would spin it.
Because remember, he wasn't just fired as a head coach. He was also fired as a general manager.
That's right, exactly.
He lost two jobs.
Running the entire show with the Houston Texans. And then Nick Saban's like, hang out here a little bit. So now you've got Ken Whisenhunt, right? Ken Whisenhunt, former head coach of the Arizona Cardinals, Tennessee Titans, offensive coordinator of the Chargers, mm-hmm. right?
Wasn't he with the Dolphins?
Was he? Probably.
The Steelers?
Probably. I think he bounced around enough in different roles. They all do. But now, he was the Steelers offensive coordinator for a while, too. Yeah. So now he gets to hang out with Nick Saban for a bit until somebody plucks him for a head coaching job somewhere, wherever that may be.
Special assistant to the head coach. That's a great title.
I love it. I love these things.
Yeah, I mean, he's been everywhere.
He's a tight ends coach. Drew Swoboda. Whoever that was.
I guess he didn't make it.
I guess, yeah. I guess it. But nevertheless, Saban just finds people to put on staff.
I mean, this past year, he was offensive analyst for Penn State. What is that?
What is that?
Do you just run stats? Is that what you do?
Are you just upstairs playing Madden? Hey, this play will work. Plugged Same in our like, guys.
Yeah, okay, guys. We need him. Okay, we need him. I can't tell you exactly what he does, but we need him. So he's on staff. We'll find something for him to do. I went over it. Like, can you imagine Ken Whisenhunt handing Nick Saban a bunch of printouts? I analyzed the offense for today's first half. Saban looks at it and throws it in the trash. It's like, listen, you're here to chill out a little bit. Then somebody's going to pick up the phone and call you. Just relax. Don't try so hard. What a job, man. It reminds me of that movie Casino. Remember in Casino with Robert De Niro, where he's trying to get his gaming license?
Yeah.
And they go, change your title to food and beverage manager. I don't know. Like, then they put your application and they put it back at the bottom of the pile. And so they're trying to avoid him being looked at by the gaming commission. So they had to change his title every now and then. That's like this. Like, hey, man, you got a spot on your team? Well, we're kind of full right now, but I think I can make you director of offensive services to the head coach. Great. I'll take it. Yeah, great. I'll send you a contract. And then he walks into the athletic director's office and goes, yeah, I need a special assistant of offensive analysis to the head coach. Of course you do. How much do you want this to pay? I don't know. $400,000 a year? Done. Great. See ya. No problem. That's how it works, man. That's how it works. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio, as we roll along on a throwback Thursday. On this date, Jeff Gordon wins the 1997 Daytona 500 as we continue.
Yo, tell me what I want, what I really, really want. Don't tell me what you want.
Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
This is Spice Girls, right?
Yes, sir.
Whatever happened to them? Do they still do stuff together?
I don't think they do anything together.
I don't think so either.
I don't know if there's been a reunion tour.
Is that a thing? Like, if they did, would people go to that? Or do you think they carry over the nostalgic popularity of the old days?
I think there would, right? Yeah. A lot of 40-something-year-old moms right now would love to just jam out to Spice Girls. You know,
exactly.
remember their youth.
That was one of my takeaways of when I watched Drive to Survive over the pandemic. So there was
Spice Girls.
Yeah, I'll tell you why.
All right.
So they did a feature on Red Bull Racing, and they did the feature on Christian Horner, who's been behind Red Bull Racing since its inception in 2005, and he's one of the more charismatic guys in the sport. But I didn't know much about his personal life, and I don't know why I didn't. So they show him at home, and he's got his kids, and he's like hanging out with his kids, getting ready to leave. And his wife comes in the room, and I'm like, oh my God, that's Ginger Spice! And it was. It was Jerry Halliwell, and I couldn't believe it. I was like, oh my God, he married a Spice Girl. I think she was the same one that dated Jason Kidd back in the early days. But nevertheless, there she was.
All right, just checking the news wire here about these Spice Girls.
Yeah.
January 29th from the Daily Mail over across the pond.
Sure,
said
across the pond.
The Spice Girls, including Victoria Beckham.
Wow.
Set to reunite for King Charles III's coronation.
Oh, why not? Absolutely. If you're King Charles, that's who you get.
Yeah.
That's your jam. That's your jam if you're King Charles. Your Majesty, who do you want to perform at your coronation?
Can you get the Spice Girls together? I'd like to have them perform at the ceremony if you can.
Need all five. Not four.
Mind.
I need all five.
Yeah, I need all five. All five by royal decree. Come please play at the coronation.
That'd be great. Good for them. Why not? Why not use the coronation of King Charles?
I guess the girls have met Charles several times throughout their career.
I don't doubt it. Charles was kind of a playmaker, even when he was married to Diana. I'm sure
it's good to be the king.
It's good, yeah. It's good to be the king, or in line to be the king, Prince of Wales. You can do that by decree.
Did he send Camilla away?
Yeah.
Queen consort.
Send queen consort away on some diplomatic mission.
I know it's my coronation, darling, but I need you.
Leave me alone for a couple of days.
Victoria Beckham jumping into there, too. That's awesome. That's great. Excited for the XFL this weekend? Listen to this. So you got the four teams. This is how the XFL is working. So you got eight teams, four in each division, a north and a south. By the way, there are three Texas teams in the South Division. 75% of the South is in Texas. Arlington, San Antonio, and Houston. Well,
rivalry.
Done. Why not?
It's the triangle rivalry.
Right. The triangle rivalry, right?
Coining that phrase right now.
There you go. Boom. The only other one in the South are the Orlando Guardians, and they're going to play at Camping World Stadium. So the North Division has the DC Defenders, Seattle Sea Dragons, St. Louis Battlehawks, and the Vegas Vipers. So you've got those teams. That's going to go down this weekend. So we'll see if it makes it. I hope it makes it. Now the head coaches are interesting. Bob Stoops is in this bad boy. He's coaching the Arlington team. Wade Phillips is in this, coaching the Houston Roughnecks. TDECU Stadium. Is that where the Cougars play? Where's that stadium? In Houston. Is that the
Cougars? That's where the Cougars play, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's the Cougars, yeah. So they're not playing at Energy Stadium.
No. That's too big.
That's what you got.
And then there's another field, like a newer one, that the Roughnecks.
The Roughnecks?
No, not the Roughnecks. What was the other Houston team?
The other one?
The other one was playing.
I don't remember. you got to be careful with these things because you don't want your stadium to be so big it looks terrible on TV.
Yeah, but it was
20,000 people showing
up. The stadium was built for the rugby team.
Oh, right.
The leather something.
Okay. Yes. We talked about this one.
Or maybe that was the other Houston team. I don't remember.
The Vegas Vipers are playing at Cashman Field, which is the baseball park for the minor league baseball team.
So out,
but it was away from it was her. That. I think it's now something else. I don't think the baseball team.
Did you see what happened in Vegas yesterday? By the way,
no. Which was what?
I saw this via social media. I can't remember which outlet. And a person put down, it's like, it's just your typical dust, rain, snowstorm hitting Vegas.
Wow, really?
And it was just something like, you know, don't leave the casino.
No doubt.
You know, don't leave the casino because somebody was driving down and it just looked terrible.
Just a dust storm?
It was a combination
of snow?
It was a dust storm because of lots of wind. There was snow falling. It was raining.
Jeez.
Hail. I mean, it was name every type of weather that you could think of was falling. And that leads me to another thing. Last night, I got stuck. I stayed up a little later than I should have because on Paramount was The Day After Tomorrow.
Oh, that's one of the craziest movies ever made of a disaster.
And I got stuck. And I mean, you know, I was into the weather because of Vegas. I looked at Vegas like, oh, look at this. Vegas is getting blasted by snow and dust and wind. And then, you know, then I'm watching Day After Tomorrow. I'm like, oh, look, I remember this one. There's, you know, tornadoes in L.A. and snow and people freezing as they just step outside.
Quick question. Celia Ward in that movie, she stays with the cancer kid?
Yeah.
Why couldn't they get the cancer kid out of there? What was the circumstances behind
that? They didn't have an ambulance.
Oh, that's
right. Or he couldn't be moved by ambulance or something. It was something weird.
Yeah, so she decides to die with him.
Which, by the way, has nothing to do with the story.
Yeah. They just threw that in there.
I mean, literally, like, you first meet Celia Ward, you know she's a doctor. But you don't know about any patients. You don't care. It's just like one of those heartstrings. Like, it's hitting Washington. She's going to stay with the patient and die.
Yeah. That was the deal. She wasn't waiting to be rescued. They ended up being rescued.
Yeah.
But she was resigned to their fate.
Yep. That they were told just the pregnant nurse to leave.
Yep. Exactly. So she was like, well, we're going to go down together, kid. Exactly.
That's one of the reasons why my wife hates the movie. She's like, I don't get it. You know, it's like, why do we have the cancer kid in this movie? It's like,
it doesn't make any sense. You're right.
To raise awareness.
Yeah, I guess so.
I don't know.
I guess so. Yeah.
Maybe they were a sponsor.
No, I did
of the
not
film.
See that in Vegas as they were going through their own weather apocalypse.
It was pretty great. I mean, they've shown golf courses just getting snowed on, a dog standing outside. I was like, yeah, it's just a dog just standing out there. Like, what's this stuff?
No doubt. Well, they got an XFL football team, the Vegas Vipers. Now, listen, you know what the problem in this league is? The players, right? There may be a good running back or two, but we were just complaining yesterday how there's no good quarterbacks. There's not enough good quarterbacks in the NFL. There's not going to be enough good quarterbacks for this thing. But the reality is that how good do you want your quarterback to be in this league, right? It can be like college, where you can have a Danny Werfel, right, throwing passes in college but doesn't have a great NFL career. You can have good quarterbacks that you could see going, hey, you know what? He may not be an NFL quarterback, but you know what? He's good for this league. That's where you have to be careful if you're The Rock, because if you try to sell it as a place where the stars get their start, you're going to fail. You're going to fail. Minor league baseball can do that. Minor league baseball can say, hey, see this 18-year-old kid that we got from Albuquerque? He's going to be the next Bryce Harper. Yeah. They love this kid. He's an All-American. He did this. He did that. He's the third-rated player on the draft board. Come to Abilene and see him. You can do that. Minor league basketball doesn't really work that way. G League tries, but in the end, if you're good enough to be in the NBA, you're in the NBA. Football, it's got its development system. It's the college game. Now, you will get a P.J. Walker. There's no doubt about that. There's no doubt that you're going to get a player or two that will be in this league, and you're like, hey, who the heck? Is he not in? Yeah, because it works that way. There's 53 guys on a roster. Practice squads are full of people. There's always, if you give a player an opportunity, so they get better, they improve. So, yeah, there's going to be GMs looking at this going, sure. When I was in minor league basketball, we had guys come all the time. Randy Fund of the Miami Heat used to come to our games all the time. You never know, because you never want to miss out. You don't know how a kid is getting better, improving. But for the most part, you're not. This is not going to be a development league. This is not going to be a league where that's going to produce the future stars. Every now and then, there'll be a good story, and they'll run it down your throat. But for the most part, your big stars are going to play college football, they're going to get on an NFL roster, and that's where they're going to grow and get better. This is football for football stakes. If you enjoy that kind of thing, you'll enjoy this. And it starts up coming up this weekend. 8 teams as the new XFL is back.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. It is Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. Let's go to our Progressive guest line. For drivers who switch and save with Progressive, save nearly $700 on average. Call or click today. Find out if we can save you hundreds on your car insurance. Shelby Mass joins us, bracketwag.com. And a reminder, when we do these bracketology type of things, we are doing a blueprint as of today because we're going to see where some teams are. Obviously, it's all subject to change as we get closer and closer to Selection Sunday. But there's nobody better in the field than Shelby Mass. His website is got a plethora of information if you want to really follow along what's been going on in college basketball and where we are sitting as we head towards March. How are you, Shelby? Thanks for joining us again.
Sure, I'm doing good. How about you?
I'm doing great. All right, so as we stand today, February 16th, who are the top four teams that you've got in this thing?
I've got Kansas, Purdue, Alabama, and Houston.
Did Alabama's road loss to a very good Tennessee team sway that in any way in terms of maybe a Texas or a UCLA popping into that spot?
They did not. Tennessee's a good team, and there's no shame in that loss. They weren't blown out. They held firm.
As far as the SEC goes, speaking of those two teams, there's a couple that you have on the bubble, including Kentucky. Where do you see them? And let's talk also about a team like Missouri, Texas A&M, Arkansas, some of these other teams in that conference in particular. Where do they stand when it comes to where they're at right now in terms of the bracket?
I've got Missouri a 7 seed, Arkansas a 10 seed, and last night Texas A&M and Kentucky both moved in.
Moved in. Okay. Was there a particular – what's the bubble situation for Kentucky? Let's start there.
It's tenuous at best. They've got to string together some wins, and they haven't been able to do that. They've got that win at Tennessee that's fantastic, but other than that, there's not much else on their resume. So they can't afford any slip-ups down the road if they want to still be considered an at-large team.
What are the teams that are finding themselves out of your picture right now, could good use some work, but right now, like, with that first four out concept?
North Carolina, Mississippi State, New Mexico, and Oregon.
Interesting. North Carolina, what a fall. They started the season preseason number one. Just goes to show you where we go with this kind of thing.
Yeah. They have no good wins on their resume.
Which conference has impressed you the most as you're analyzing it? Maybe a little surprise. Maybe you thought, oh, maybe this is actually better than I thought. Which conference is catching your radar?
The ACC is better than people think. They don't have the quality of really good teams, but they're going to send at least six, I think, to the tournament, maybe seven, but lower seeds. But the Big 12 has just been kicking everybody's butt.
Yeah.
They're so good.
Without question, that is definitely the conference. Do you like Pittsburgh? That's a team near the top of the ACC. They go back and forth a bit, but do you like the Panthers?
I do. I've got them in at the 10 seed. They've got good wins, and they've got more than average for quad one wins. They've got that stinker of a loss to Florida State at home, and that'll hurt come selections of that, but I think they're pretty safe.
How deep is this? How when you're looking at this, is it more on the downside with teams? Is it more on the upside with teams when you're looking at the largeness of it and narrowing it down?
Well, about 2 weeks ago, that bubble was looking really strong. The bubble teams were playing good, getting wins, and in the past 2 weeks, things have fallen apart. You've got teams on the bubble that probably may not be in during most years. But I've got to fill out 68 teams, so they're there.
The Big East, Villanova lost Jay Wright as he retired from head coaching, but Xavier is good. Marquette is a team I'm kind of on board with. I really like the Golden Eagles. Creighton obviously still ranked. How do you like that conference?
That's going to be a tough conference. UConn's good also.
Yep, UConn
I've got
too.
Three teams from the Big East on the four line, so something's going to have to give them.
Fantastic. Shelby Mass joining us again from BracketWag.com, which has been a disappointing conference, a conference that had some potential, but it just not really popping up.
As of late, I would say the Mountain West. There was talk of them getting four or five teams in, but the upper echelon has been losing lately, except for San Diego State. And right now, it's looking like a three-bid league and maybe just two.
I know non-conference games can give you a kind of a different look and appeal. I get that. But I thought UNLV could have a good season this year, and it didn't look like that happened.
No, I had them early on as high as a seventh seed. They were really good, and they've fallen off too.
Let's go to one of the other conferences, the Big Ten. There's been some up and downs. Purdue has been the number one team at one point. Michigan has played well. Michigan State pops up here and there. Indiana is ranked. How do you look at the Big Ten?
Big Ten is going to get the most bids because of the sheer size of it. But Purdue is the only one that I feel comfortable with. I feel pretty good about Indiana, but everybody else can be beaten. They could all be gone second round, or they have five teams in the Sweet 16. I'm just not sure. Can't get a good grasp on them.
We always talk about Gonzaga. They're a team everybody wants to see finally win a championship, but they're not going to be a number one seed. Where do you see the Bulldogs?
I've got them in a three seed out west, and that probably fits them just right.
About right where they are?
Yeah.
How good is Houston? How good is Kelvin Sampson's squad? We've seen them in the Final Four. Their Final Four will be in Houston, so there's obviously a hometown pull there. But how good are the Cougars this year? What do they do well?
Offense and defense. That's the only team in the country that's in the top 10 in KenPom in both offense and defense. So you're not going to get an easy game against them. They got guys that can bring it on the defensive end and offense. I think what's going to hurt them is they had a very good non-conference schedule, played lots of tough games, and their conference is kind of weak. So they've had not so tough games coming down the stretch. And, you know, I hope it doesn't come back to bite them. It's not their fault. It's the nature of the beast.
Shelby Mastigan joining us, bracketwag.com. West Virginia, do you see Bob Huggins getting those Mountaineers in?
I'm thinking so, but they've still got work to do.
Yeah.
They're 15-11. I've got them on the nine line. But the Big 12 being so good, they can get wins, but they can also take two or three more losses. It just depends on how the committee looks at it.
Duke, the first year under John Shire, Mike Krzyzewski's always had this team near the top, but where are they now at 18-8?
I've got them as a 7th seed and not comfortable in the 7 line. They could fall to the 8-9 game. There's not that many opportunities left for them to get big wins.
We talk about mid-majors a lot. How is the mid-major conferences? Are they popping a bit?
Not really this year. Florida Atlantic is the class of all the mid-majors, well, save Gonzaga. But Florida Atlantic, they're pretty good. They'll be in there and probably in the 8-9 game. But other than that, it's going to be tough for them to get any out of the league to get two bids or even, you know, possibility of three. I think the Mountain West and the West Coast Conference will have them. But as far as Missouri Valley, probably not. Any others, the chances are slim.
Maryland's got a game tonight against Purdue. Do they need a lot of work, 17-8?
I don't know about a lot of work, but they need to win games they should win. And it's okay to lose games you should lose. But win those games you have got that you're supposed to win, and that'll keep the committee on your side.
The teams, and you've done this for a long time, you know those teams that, you know, look, we're going to talk about 68 teams, but there's only a certain amount that can win it all. Do you think that list is big? Do you think that list is small based on the way teams are playing this year?
I think it's big right now. But come March, I think it will have pared itself down a little bit. But I think most of the teams that I have seeded 1 through maybe 6, probably 5, they've got a legitimate shot to win it. There's no clear-cut favorite. You know, there's teams that have played good, but there's not one team that stands out like that's the team to beat.
Yeah, that's been the interesting part this season, is I feel like there's been a share of these number ones around the top. And it happens. They lose and they drop and they lose. But it feels like this year I feel like I wake up to a new flavor of the month in college basketball.
There have been 8 number one teams that have lost this year. That is tied for the record for the most in the season, and we still got a month left.
You're very good at what you do, Shelby. We love having you on, my friend. We hope to get you on as we get closer to Selection Sunday. Thanks a lot, man.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
You got it. Shelby Mast joining us, giving us the lowdown on college hoops. So there you have it. Right now, it's Alabama, it's Kansas, it's Purdue, it's Houston. Those are his top four. But like he said, right now that list is long of really, really good teams. But the bubble teams are the ones that always get me interested. Team like Maryland that plays Purdue tonight, a team like Duke at 18-8, a team like West Virginia that can beat you defensively, but they've got to pop some more victories in a very, very tough conference. Those are the ones I'm watching for. And I'm still looking at Rutgers, and I'm still looking at Illinois and USC as teams that are trying to get in this thing.
Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
1997, Throwback Thursday. What a fun song this was, wasn't it? Oh, my goodness. 26 years ago?
Yeah.
There you go. No doubt. Who did this song?
Sublime.
Sublime, that's right. That's right. God, my memory banks. They're starting to fall apart. But nevertheless, Jeff Gordon wins the Daytona 500 at the age of 25 on this date. That's our Throwback Thursday. Thanks to a Shelby Mast. Always good. He is a rapid-fire guest.
He knows all the schools.
You better... You got to...
I think you ought to challenge him. Find some obscure D1 schools.
What's the
likelihood of these guys making the tournament? And he'd probably know, like, 2 or 3 players on that team.
That's a great idea. There was a, that's a famous story, by the way, of the early in the as the NFL draft was becoming popular, Mel Kiper, right, famously jumped on the bandwagon very early, very, very early. He was one of the original draft gurus. But there was one guy in New York City, and again, way before internet, but really knew his stuff, went, got every roster of every team. But he had one of those memory things where he could remember everything. And he would be on local shows talking, and somebody would try to trick him. And they would say, like, hey, man, what do you think of Reggie Simmons out of Mississippi Valley State? He'd be like, doesn't exist. And it, he would just right off the bat, no, doesn't exist. Not on that roster. And didn't have any problems. Like, yeah, he, no, he's not. Yeah, no, he isn't. Shelby Mask, I could do that. I probably could do that with him. I could probably make up a school. They don't even play basketball. Oh, really? Oh, yeah, they don't. Huh? Nah. He really knows. He really, really dives deep into this stuff.
If you're like, you know, who's the top star? What's him out of you?
And what's him out of you? Yeah. Well, Rocky the Squirrel does a really good job on the post.
Yep.
So, but
no one guards the rim better than Bullwinkle.
Bullwinkle guards the rim
better.
It's
like he has four sets of hands with those antlers.
It's unbelievable. You can't get anything past Bullwinkle. And what's him out of you? But he brought up KenPom, and we were just talking off the air. If you've ever, if you're a college basketball nut, you've probably looked at a KenPom ranking. But if you haven't, let me just tell you, it's a mental exercise. It's it's a beautiful mind with a Russell Crowe.
It's like
just
studying for the pre-SATs with an ACT book.
Exactly. Like when he said Houston is the top adjusted offense and defense, like that's what you get at KenPom.
Yeah,
it's really fun.
Because anytime I look at that, I always think of Austin Powers.
Yeah,
where
right.
He's just sitting there and he's talking about stuff. He goes, and now I've gone cross-eyed.
Right. That's extremely. It's nuts. It doesn't give you like it's not a site to go to if you want to know what Houston's free throw percentage is. Like you can find that if you dig into the stats, but it'll give you like adjusted tempo. It'll get like basically how many points based on tempo. Like they'll give you adjusted offense, adjusted defense, adjusted strength of schedule. There's a lot of real, real deep numbers. And the one thing, if you subscribe to it, it's like $20 a month. It's kind of worth it. If you subscribe to it, you can click on a team. Like I'm on the site right now, so I can click on Alabama and I'll get their complete schedule. I'll get their results for the schedule. Then I will get all sorts of in-depth stats. Then I'll get the player statistics. Then I'll get their depth chart over the last five games, the most frequent lineup that they're using. So you can get the starting five that is used most by Nate Oates for the Crimson Tide, and all sorts of detailed stats on every player, every major player. And they highlight the players that are nationally ranked in certain categories. So you can really get a really, really good snapshot of your team. But it's a mental dive, as you mentioned. It's a lot of really detailed statistics. And some of it may not matter to people, but coaches use this kind of stuff. And it gives you an idea of where teams are. Because I think that's the one thing about the selection committee where the average college basketball fan may go, wait, hold on. That team won 19 games or 20 games, and they didn't get in. Why didn't they get in? And it's sites like KenPom and, you know, net rankings and all this stuff. Like, it's all the little – there's devil in all the details. And so when you get to that RPI and all that stuff, you find out a little bit more about these teams. You figure out how they do it. It doesn't mean there's not controversy, but nevertheless, it's how they put these things together. It's a real – it's a fun exercise if you love college basketball. And they've been doing it for forever. So and they give you some fun stuff, you know, some fun stats. But it can be overwhelming. Following Division I college basketball is more overwhelming because there's 350 teams that are in this thing. Like 300, I think 363 is the grand total of Division I teams. And again, most of them are not even in the conversation. A good majority of them aren't in the conversation when it comes to filling out this tournament. But there are enough where you're going to have to make some tough decisions because you're not filling out, as many of you know, you're not filling out 68 slots. You're filling them out about 30 because of all the guaranteed slots that are going to the conference tournament winners. So you're going to be plucking some teams out of nowhere. That's always the isn't that always the saddest when you have a team like let's say you're in the SoCon and you're Furman. Furman's won 8 in a row. They just had it snapped last night with the loss to the Citadel. But you have Furman and they're like on top of the conference, right? And they're playing great. And then they get to the conference tournament, and if they lose early, that's it. That's it. Their body of work doesn't sustain itself. They still have to kind of win their conference tournament. And every now and then you might squeeze, and a team might be really, really good, and they get the benefit of having that one bad tournament game. But not a lot of them. Not a lot of them. And then that ends up with a team that has got a spot in the tournament where we celebrate them because they're like, wow, they were a 6 seed in their own conference tournament. They turned on the Jets and they won this thing. But always remember that when you root for that small conference that's really tiny, when you root for that underdog to make that really special run to get on the big stage, it means somebody that had a really good year that was the number one seed, they don't get to go. They're out. And that's always the heartbreaking part of those conference tournaments, is that instead of the regular season champion getting the automatic bid, and let the conference championship be a conference championship, instead they put all their eggs in the basket of win the mini tournament that happens after a year of playing basketball, a season of playing basketball, just win this mini tournament on the side, punch your ticket into the NCAA tournament. And I know I've said many times, if you have a chance to make a deep run in the NIT, I mean, a deep run and get to the Final Four and get to play in New York City at Madison Square Garden, or be one and done out of the NCAA tournament as a 15 seed, you take the NCAA tournament every single time. There's nothing that compares for a small school in a small conference. Nothing is bigger than being on that stage. And you know what it does? It comes without anybody needing to pay for the experience, right? So when like a Charleston Southern gets $2 million from Florida to get their butts kicked in Gainesville at the beginning of the football season, that's the school selling itself to anybody that wants to, have them on their schedule. Their kids get to experience playing in front of 75,000 people in a gigantic stadium when most of their season is played at a high school level bleacher type of field. That's something your school can sell.
Yeah, and my school, they've made it every once in a while. There was a string there. They were almost making it it seemed like every other year.
Yeah.
And I don't think they've ever been higher than a 14 seed,
sure.
a 13 seed. But it's the highlight of the school.
Incredible.
I tune in. I'm excited to see them lose because I know they will.
Sure.
But, it's a tournament where it's like, yeah, man, there's a chance.
But when you're talking about real small conferences, right? I mean, really small ones. The ones where you find them on ESPN.
Well, that's my school.
Right? Yeah.
The Big Sky.
Where they're not on local TV, right? They might have a radio team, and that's about it. And then all of a sudden, it's ba-na-na-na-dun-dun-dun-dun.
Yeah. Dun, big stage.
The logo is there next to, like, UCLA.
Mm-hmm.
And they're playing in this great arena in somewhere in America in front of a full crowd, and the national attention is on them because everybody fills out a bracket. You can't buy that.
Yeah, you would always see it was funny because you would tune in to the final. Sometimes the semifinal would be shown. It was like the Big Sky conference tournament.
Yeah.
But it would be on ESPN, like in the start time was like 11:30.
Right. Where'd you go to school again?
Cal State Northridge.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Big Sky with Montana State, Northern Colorado, Weber State.
They usually made it.
Yeah, right. Montana. Montana's always been one of those teams.
But I know, but I mean, it was, but the game didn't start till like 11:30 at night.
Yeah,
I mean, that's how bad
it
was.
Yeah, right.
It's like, oh, we got all these other things. Oh, we can fit you guys in now.
I remember two times Air Force went to the, it was great. All right, we'll see you tomorrow for the Friday edition of the show as we get you rolling on the end of the week. Lombardi Line is coming up next here on Sports Map Radio. Glad you could be with us.